This is Gus Van Sant, director of Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, and you are listening to Film Wax Radio.
Hey, everybody. Adam Shartoff here, your host of Film Wax Radio, the independent film podcast. Every week, I interview people from the entire spectrum of the independent film industry. This week is an exciting episode. This is episode number 495. And by the way, I made the announcement last week that Ramin Barani will be on the 500th episode. We'll get to today's episode in a second, by the way. Let's talk about the 500th episode just for a moment, since it's looming, and I'm going to make a big deal out of it. Ramin Barani is a great filmmaker. He directed A Man Pushed Cart, Chop Shop, Goodbye Solo, At Any Price, 99 Homes, and of course, Fahrenheit 451. One of the great indie filmmakers working today. There's so much to talk to him about. And guess what? We did do it. We already did it. Today, as I record this, it's Wednesday, July the 11th. So I met up with him on Monday at July 9th. He wanted to meet somewhere local because he's adapting a new, you know, a book into a screenplay right now. We do talk about it on the podcast. So he wanted to be close to home. So I thought, let me think of a place where it's not too far from where he lives. And so fortunately, my friends at Kickstarter in Greenpoint supplied us with a very comfortable space where we were able to knock out this this upcoming episode. So look for it's, I think it times in at about an hour and maybe 15 minutes, give or take. So look for that coming out in a few weeks. My guess is it will be in early to mid-August when we drop that episode. In the meantime, this episode, I have not mentioned it, because I wanted it to be a kind of a surprise, but by now you know Gus Van Sant is on this episode. I mean, this is another, you know, huge figure in the independent film world, going all the way back. So he'll be on. We'll get to him in a minute. I'm very excited. It was a great conversation. Gus Van Sant, he's got a new film. It's called Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. And then, if that weren't enough, and it is, but I'm so happy to also present a great second segment on this episode, which is the team, the entire team behind this new movie, Eighth Grade, which I'm going to make everybody go to see. I want everybody to see it. I'm even going to bring my own son, who just graduated the eighth grade. In this case, we have the filmmaker, also known as a comedian, Bo Burnham. He will be here in the second segment with three of his actors from the film. We have Elsie Fisher, who is the main star of the film. She's the eighth grader in question. And then we have also Emily Robinson, who plays a very sympathetic character in this film. And also via phone, but, you know, it's like a bucket list cross off for me, we have the great actor Josh Hamilton as well, who plays Elsie's father, who plays her dad in this very touching film. So we're going to have all those folks on as well. So let's get to this first movie here. It's called Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. Now, it was adapted, or it's, I guess, being credited that, even though Gus, of course, directed, the story is by Gus and John Callahan. Now, John Callahan was a severe alcoholic, but also, you know, a very charismatic guy. And because of his penchant for alcohol and living in so much pain, he put himself into a very harmful situation at a certain point in his young adulthood, and he was in a horrific car accident. And as a result of that catastrophic accident, he became paraplegic and he was bound to a wheelchair. And after a while, he decided to get it together. And this film is all about that. It's about his treatment. It's about dealing with it. It's a very, very moving film. And it was adapted from a memoir that Callahan wrote, because he eventually started to focus on his cartooning and became a very well-known cartoonist in his own right. So anyhow, this film is all about coming out of that bleaker period. And even though it seems like this is the bleaker period when he can't walk, in fact, it is a film about rebounding and about saving yourself, essentially. And it's a very powerful central performance by Joaquin Phoenix. This is like the second film that Joaquin Phoenix is in. He was in You Were Never Really Here, and we had on that filmmaker. Wouldn't it be nice just to get Joaquin Phoenix on the show? I mean, it seems like it would. But we had on Lynn Ramsey a couple of months ago with her film, and now we have on Gus Van Sant. So it's pretty good. I'm not complaining. Two fabulous filmmakers. But Joaquin plays John Callahan. An unrecognizable Jonah Hill plays his charismatic sponsor. His girlfriend is played by Rooney Mara. Also, supporting roles are played by Jack Black, Carrie Brownstein, Beth Ditto, and Kim Gordon. When I went up to talk to Gus, I ran into Kim Gordon. She was there. So I was able to say hi and shake her hand and say hello to her. It was very nice. But anyway, I'm getting off subject here. So Gus Van Sant. It's good to see Gus back. This is, you know, Gus in conventional mode in the sense that it's a linear story and it's not one of his more experimental films. Some of those experimental films are among his best, and some of them have flopped. And by the way, that's what makes a courageous filmmaker and storyteller, right? So if you've been following Gus Van Sant, you know, he came on the scene in 1986 with a film called Mala Noche, which I believe you can find on YouTube. I may be wrong, but you can find it if you look. It might also be, you know, part of a DVD package that with one of his other early films, like a Drugstore Cowboy. So I guess Mala Noche did well enough where he got the money to make Drugstore Cowboy a couple of years later in 1989. And that was also a big hit. And the timing was very good. In the late 80s was when American independent film was finding a brand new, robust, explosive period. And, you know, that is, of course, something that this podcast likes to focus on. So he came back with Drugstore Cowboy. Then he made another great hit, which was My Own Private Idaho. Now, these movies, by the way, on paper, looked like nobody's going to make them. They're about, you know, I mean, Drugstore Cowboy. You also have another addict character in Matt Dillon's character. It introduced us to a number of young actors, as did My Own Private Idaho, which was about hustlers, male street hustlers. But that movie also did well. And what did he go do? He went and he made a commercial film called Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, and that was an enormous flop. But you're allowed to do that, or you were certainly back then, 25 years ago. You're allowed to make a flop. It wasn't ideal, but you could actually, if you've got a couple of hits, and then you make one that's not such a big hit. And he ended up making To Die For with Nicole Kidman and Matt Dillon back, and that was a very big success. So now that you've had two big surges of successful films made for relatively small amount of money, relatively, you get the keys to the big car. You know, you get to start making. What did he do? He made some more of his biggest hits. He made Good Will Hunting, an enormous success, commercially and otherwise. Psycho remake, not such a great success, but probably made its money back, is my guess. Finding Forrester, big success. Just watched it again, by the way. Loved it. And then he did something interesting at the height of his career now. In the year 2000, he makes Finding Forrester. A couple of years later, what does he do? He makes a film called Jerry. A bleak, long takes, not much is happening, a lot of walking around. It's very experimental in its approach, unlike the other movies he's made. Then he goes and he does it again with Elephant. Dark, bleak, very bleak film. And then he tops it off with Last Days. Again, a bleak story, long takes, but all extremely watchable films. I'd say Jerry is probably the hardest of those three. But and then again, it's hard to watch Elephant. It's so violent. And then Last Days is also just extremely disturbing, all said. After that period, he's back. He makes Paranoid Park, which is his edging his way back into more commercial approach. And he makes Milk. And Milk is an enormous success again, and it's an Oscar-nominated and Oscar-winning film, and everybody loves it. And he's going to now kind of oscillate. So he makes Promised Land, and he makes The Sea of Trees. Neither do, I don't think, very well, but he's back with Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, which I think should be a big deal, because it's just very powerful. Now, he's done plenty of other things, like videos and shorts and produced and executive produced other projects. So this is a very, very prolific filmmaker. I was very especially happy to finally get Gus Van Sant on this podcast. And now that I had him on once, I can get him on again. What do you think? It's being distributed by Amazon Studios. As I record this, it opens this Friday, July 13th, in cities across the country, including here in New York at the Union Square Regal Cinema. So and check your local listings. I want to just say what an incredible opportunity it is to have Gus Van Sant. So we'll talk to him. We'll be back after that to introduce 8th Grade, those guys. But right now, here for the first time on this podcast, the great filmmaker Gus Van Sant.
The last day that I walked, I woke up without a hangover.
Ah, pretty groovy day, huh? I knew I had an hour or so of grace before
the withdrawal symptoms set in. And that was it.
Keep them coming, bro.
Dexter had mistaken the light pole for an exit and slammed into it at 90 miles an hour.
How are things going here, John?
I can't move.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going too well.
People say we got it made.
I'm Donnie, and I'm an alcoholic. My day has been pretty good until I came in here and saw all of you. Maybe you were weakened so you could become strong. So
something really profound just happened to me, man. I don't
expect you. That's really funny. It's you.
I draw these for a living, but people get mad at me because of the subject matter.
It's offensive. After you've caused.
I like the sound of that. Yeah. All right. Let me get this. It's nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
There. So you don't have to worry about raising your voice or anything like that.
Testing 1, 2. Do you have a meter?
Yeah. This is a pretty good... It's relatively new.
And what does this jack go into? Oh, it goes into
I
a
have two external,
master?
Yeah, there's like... Well, no, there's two external type of mics they give you. So one is, I guess, for like a 360, and one is maybe for two people. It's kind of neat. But I this is so much better. It just sounds so warm and like you're right there. You know, it is actually nice to meet you. It's not too often I get to say that, you know, as a young guy coming up in the 1980s, and I had two parents who were very into film and introduced me to all the great auteurs when I was growing up. We had Fellini and Bergman and Kurosawa playing at home, my parents would talk about them. So when I hit my 20s and I kind of moved to my own place in Brooklyn, and I was able to kind of discover cinema on my own, your films were right there. It's a nice outcome or result of doing something like this where I get to actually sit with you and do this.
Great.
So thanks for doing it. Don't worry, He Won't Get Far on Feet is adapted from a memoir from a fellow Portland resident, John Callahan, right? Who was in a horrific... He was a severe alcoholic, and he was in a car accident. He was sitting as a passenger in the car, and when he woke up, he was in the hospital, and he's paralyzed from then on. And your film is adapted. I didn't have a chance to read the memoir, so pardon me for that. But I did obviously see the film at BAM, and most of it takes place during this, with some exceptions of flashbacks here and there. But it was primarily about John's recovery.
Yes.
Yeah.
That book was it's from a memoir that John Callahan wrote, and the memoir was about his whole life, and this adaptation sort of tells the middle part of his life, the from his accident through his physical recovery, through his alcohol recovery, and then into sort of early stages of his cartooning, when he was first being published by first the school newspaper, then a local Portland weekly newspaper, and then finally, like, the very last is his first publication in a national magazine.
So you chose to focus on on his physical and his alcoholic recovery. I guess it makes sense to pick a section.
Well, yeah,
it,
I mean,
and that is
you don't have to, but I think if you try and include all the stages of someone's life, if it's long enough, it can get episodic, and there's just too much information. So I had to make a choice of what areas, and it was hard because sometimes there were parts of his earlier life when he was, say, 16, he was working in a mental institution, when he was older and trying to publish in national magazines, which took him a while, he had mentors who were working with him. One was Sam Gross, who was a New Yorker, person, but also published in the New Yorker. And he would tell John, like, don't send your originals, or, like, you know, always include the return envelope or whatever, you know, like.
Right. These are details, but they're really essential.
Essential. But he had also, like, stylistic details of, like, how to phrase, say, a joke, or how to draw, a person walking, or, you know, technical things I'm imagining. But he's going to hear this and go, like, I never said that. That was a large part of his life, was, like, his cartooning life, his interface with, I think, maybe the disabled community and their efforts to get better elevator buttons and better ramps and in the code of building, which was happening during sort of part of his life.
I just appreciated that the core of the film was about his recovery, but specifically this journey of forgiveness, which was really a very emotional thing to watch. You know, I've seen it before, but I have not seen it quite so raw and kind of I don't know, it lacks almost entirely sentimentality. But I did find myself getting emotional during watching the film. I was brought to tears. I don't want to give away stuff, so you let me know. But there is a scene late in the film with the driver of the car, and then he had to also, where he did ask that character played by Jack Black. He did ask him for forgiveness, even though I think Jack Black kind of jaw drops at that. You know, it's not exactly what he expected the conversation was going to go.
Yeah, I think that during his recovery, he had a lot of interfaces with his past, people he thought he needed to ask forgiveness, or maybe they thought they should ask him for forgiveness.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it leads one down the road to the point where you have to forgive yourself, essentially.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the big...
The big one.
The big one, right. But I'm just wondering, clearly, though, this was I assume a conscious choice of yours that you wanted this to be at the core of the film, that, you know, this part of the film, the journey, rather.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if there was more to that in your own feelings as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, or
yeah, I mean, I think that John Callahan's story was kind of, in a nutshell, always included that area, you know, not necessarily the details of recovery, but I mean the details of physical recovery are one thing, the details of alcohol abuse recovery was another thing, but it both were actually, the centerpieces of his whole life. You know, he had his accident at 21, and it wasn't until he was 28 that he was really, like, kind of able to really like focus on drawing cartoons. And he was a cartoonist. He was known primarily as a cartoonist. And that journey in the in those 8 years, he often wrote about. He often, you know, was writing about his disability, but he was also writing about, in his cartoons, even like recovery, alcohol recovery. So those were the sort of main areas of, I think, his life outside of like the cartooning world or outside of his like growing up. And he, you know, in his book, it was like that too. Mm-hmm. So my attraction was partly, you know, the knowledge of that I had of recovery was somewhat informed, not entirely informed, not being a truly recovered person myself, but somebody that actually had some experience, limited experience with groups or AA or group therapy. I had seen things in my own group therapy that were extremely exciting, because you were going through somebody's life, and then you knew that it was going to turn on you. You were going to tell your story that were very therapeutic, and I had never seen that particularly in a film. I'd seen it sometimes, like in Good Will Hunting. There's a revelation that our character has that. You know, I had seen and been part of that particular event or scene, but I did have information on my own that was inspiring that part of the movie.
Yeah, there's a moment also in the one of the groups, because this is a 12-step program led by a character led by a recovering alcoholic as well, played by Jonah Hill. And there's a moment where there is another, where there's, like you mentioned, the one I guess you were referring to between Matt Damon and Robin Williams' characters in Good Will Hunting, that there was a revelation. And it's interesting, this time you have the characters say, oh, there was a revelation, but I thought it was supposed to be this huge moment, you know, where life changes. And it's not. Life does change, especially if you're open to receiving that change, but it's not usually a large moment. It's a small moment.
Yeah, I think that was something that came up during the rehearsal of, like, you know, I think in our film it actually was a big moment for the film viewer, but maybe for the character, he says, I thought that I would be changed. The revelation itself, which was a small revelation but very important to John Callahan. But I think you needed to apply that revelation to life.
That's a good point.
You know, it wasn't going to necessarily like be the moment. Like it wasn't going to be, euphoric. Yeah. I guess that particular moment. It needed to be applied.
I'm angry at my dad. And then what? You know, it's like, well, that was what he went through. I should mention. I'm actually angry at my dad, so I just have to process it here. But, you know, I got to apply it somehow. There is that.
Yes, you need to go talk to dad.
Yeah, talk to him. And you mentioned Good Will Hunting. I'm going to also say there's another kind of connection to another prior film. It's interesting. I was rewatching it after many years, which was also my introduction to Gus Van Sant, which is, you know, no surprise, Drugstore Cowboy. In that film, Matt Dillon has his own, obviously, severe addiction and goes through recovery too, but it's a very different kind at a very different time, 1980s. well, it takes place in the 70s, actually. But right, we're maybe 12
seconds.
It's like
we're early 70s.
There. Yeah, we're definitely there. But I don't know for narcotics addiction necessarily, certainly for alcohol, but he chose just kind of do it in his own way. Mm-hmm. Has your own feelings about that recovery, and I'm not even talking about your own personal life.
In that one, it's more like methadone.
Yeah.
He's like on the methadone program.
Yeah.
Which
we don't really see in Dr. Cowboy. I mean,
you don't see him drinking the methadone, but he tells the William Burroughs character
yeah.
that he's on this like methadone program and then Burroughs says, I'm on the program too, but sometimes you get ahead of your schedule. So it's like the methadone program was like using a like maybe stronger drug to treat like a less strong drug.
You didn't show it though. Why didn't you show it now that we're
methadone?
Yeah, his well, going we were into talking the about it.
I think there was never any like little.
I don't remember it. I just saw it. And I may have missed it. I may have missed it. But I was playing.
I think because we didn't really know like or research. We just knew that he was on the program and he kind of like didn't believe in it.
If you want to grab that your drink, by the way, I know the ice is melting into it. Okay,
don't worry.
Anyway, I just found it. It was great to go and see that again.
That whole scene, they have a little group therapy in that movie as well, which was, I think, added. I think we just threw it in. We had the guys that were there, and I think, or maybe we sort of like added it to the script. There were things that we would, in Drugstore Cowboy, that we would add. Mm-hmm. And I think that little moment when they're sharing to get their stories together was an addition to what was in the original story.
When I brought up when you brought up Good Will Hunting and I brought up Drugstore Cowboy, you smiled both times.
I did. Drugstore Cowboy.
Yeah, and when you talked about Good Will Hunting, you smiled. I don't know. I don't know if it gives you pleasure to remember and to talk about your films in that way, or if it's just it was just an I don't know. I just noticed that it seemed like I was glad to bring it up because let's see what else I wrote down here. That might make you smile. Okay, so again, the name of the film is Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, and it's directed by Gus Van Sant. It's opening in, I meant to ask the publicist actually this, just because I know it's opening on the 13th of July, thanks to the folks at Amazon Studios. Well, you know, a lot of film people do listen to this show, actually, a lot of filmmakers. And so it might be cool. Did Ted Hope call you up, or how did that happen, the Amazon Studios?
No, it was our producers were out, and one of them was Steve Golan, and they were very experienced, like, movie producers whose job is kind of like to know who's got money to spend on movies, because you know you might go to a particular place, Sony, not knowing that. You know, they've used up their budget for that year.
Oh, right.
You gotta know who hasn't spent all the money.
Interesting. I never thought of that.
I don't think Amazon was necessarily that. I think they had spent all the money by the time we went there. But
they have a discretionary fund. It's pretty big, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So as opposed to Sony, maybe.
Yeah, we kind of like out of the choices. We had meetings with different people, but we ended up siding with Amazon.
But did you have conferences with Ted?
Yes, that was
He's done the show a few times. I know. Oh yeah. I know him pretty well over the years.
Yeah. We had a meeting with Ted when we were getting closer to like, you know, agreeing about things. There was the rights to the book were owned by Sony Pictures.
Oh wow.
So there was a little bit of like, you know, kind of. Massaging that before I had the meeting with Ted Hope at Amazon, we needed to know we could actually like get the rights.
Sure.
The rights were, I think, contingent upon us getting a deal, but you couldn't get the deal without the rights.
Catch
so there was a little
too,
bit
right?
of like, you know, when to have the meeting. But eventually, we met with Ted. You know, they had notes on the script, and which. With Ted are really good notes. He's really smart.
Yeah, I hear him.
And we met with them.
Do you have a sense that this one is going to have a more of a popular appeal, this film, because of the subject matter, the redemption of the character, you know, his journey is something that we think a lot of people could relate to. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. I hope so. I mean, I was talking with somebody about commercialism and non-commercialism, and he was mentioning death as like perhaps a non-commercial aspect. And I realized, well, Jaws has death and Star Wars has death and Lawrence of Arabia has death.
Yeah.
And I realized it was instead of death being the non-commercial aspect of a story, it's usually like defeat is the thing that you don't want to have. Mm-hmm. You want to have victory with death. Mm-hmm. instead of defeat with death.
Yeah.
So hopefully it has enough victory in it.
Mm. I believe it does. We mentioned earlier also, just to now oscillate back to the story again. But Callahan, John, you know, as I mentioned, he was living in Portland. You're still living. Are you still based in Portland?
Now living in Los Angeles. Okay. But I just moved there.
Oh, really? That's why you won't take off your sunglasses. I was wondering. No, I'm kidding. are you working on something that's going to require more of your presence there, or is it just it was just the timing?
No, it was more of a. I had a house in L.A. Uh-huh. And I started to use it more often, and eventually, I bought a house in Palm Springs, so I needed to kind of lighten up on my real estate holdings.
I understand. I'm venturing into personal territory. I didn't necessarily intend to do that, but good to know. And so I guess I was asking because I was wondering because you were in Portland, I guess, for so long, or at least spending a great amount of time there, if you had had – I know Callahan died in 2010 – but had you known him and had
yeah.
you?
Yeah, well, originally this was a project for Robin Williams that Robin Williams had in the mid-90s or 96 yeah. or 7. He had bought this book, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Not the rights, mind you, but the book, a copy of the book.
The rights. No, oh, he brought the copy.
He did,
the rights.
Oh, he had it. Oh,
yeah,
is that
for
right?
himself.
Oh, okay,
I'll shut to up. Play the role.
Okay.
Yeah, he bought it, and he didn't option it. He bought, got Sony, or somebody got Sony to, maybe it was John, maybe John's, I'm not sure, but he bought it. So by the time we had written a script in the 90s, and we also wrote a script in the early 2000s, and the project never got put together. It never got, like, a go, or it never got, like... a date because of, I'm not sure why, you know, we never heard why, maybe the quality of the script, maybe the needs of Robin, like what was going on in his career, or it could have been, you know, the studio not really wanting to do this mm-hmm. particular story. But later John died and then Robin died. So a year after Robin died, the studio wondered whether I still wanted to work on this. And I did, and we went to pitch the studio on a new incarnation, and then they said no again. So the Sony said no, all their divisions said no, and we ended up at Amazon.
So I just got the longer version of that origin story. And, oh my gosh, Robin Williams, yeah. Well, I see you do like to revisit... actors you have relationships with. I can imagine mm-hmm. that's got to be a nice thing. You have shorthand, you have friendships and trust built into it. So that's as you do with, and I can't believe I'm only mentioning Joaquin's name for the first time in this conversation, because he, I think, gave a masterly performance. I mean, I think he was just unbelievable. So there's somebody you have a long relationship with too. Was he like the go-to guy for you, or was he up there at the top? Did that go smoothly, or was it about, again, timing?
With Robin?
With Joaquin.
Oh, with Joaquin.
Yeah.
We had been in touch all these years, like since To Die For. We had worked together on To Die For.
No smile with To Die For.
On To Die For.
Smile with Good Will Hunting and with Drugs Are Covered, nothing for To Die For. So interpret that as you
Not
will.
Not because, you know, I don't love it.
I'm kidding.
But,
I'm sure you did love that film. After
yeah, I did.
Cowgirls. I mean.
But Yeah, we had talked about a lot of different projects, but and this one was, I think, when I was thinking, you know, asked by Sony if I was interested in it, I thought, well, who would play John? If it's not going to be Robin, then what actor in it? Just, you know, Joaquin came to mind.
So it's a great choice he did. I mean, I can't imagine anybody else. I mean, that sounds cliche, but it's true. Did you catch him in that Lynn Ramsey film?
I saw the Lynn Ramsey film in Sundance. It was really good.
Yeah. Oh, you played there. That's where this premiered.
Correct? Yeah, this premiered there too.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. Yeah. She did the podcast too. I'm just, you know, it's exciting. I get these people on. I don't know how it's happening, but she's delightful. She had to come with subtitles though, because she's got a very thick Scottish.
Did you really interpreter on the air?
No. That would have been you just have to lean in a little closer. Mm-hmm. It's okay. People love her. So, well, we're winding down here. Can you do me a favor? Is it okay if you just do a little one of those IDs, where you say you're listening to the name? Do you mind?
No.
I always feel self-conscious asking it, but I appreciate that. So I wrote it down here so you can, except that there's a typo here. It's okay.
Oh,
it's all right. He knows how to say his name. I'm just teasing. You could just say whatever you want, but this is the name of the show, Film Wax Radio.
Okay. This is Gus Van Sant, director of Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. You're listening to Film Wax Late. Oops.
That's okay. Slow it down. I'm going to direct you here. A little slower. This is Gus. Put some feeling into it, for God's sake. I'm just kidding around.
This is Gus Van Sant, director of Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. And you are listening to Film Wax Radio.
That's great. Thank you for doing that. Well, good luck with the film. It's wonderful, and I would one day hope maybe we can do this again when you're not
next movie.
Yeah, I know it's the tough thing. It's always I prefer between projects. You know.
Yeah.
But I know sometimes when you are between this, maybe the last thing you want to do is talk about. I know.
It's like, well, I don't know. You could.
Mm-hmm. That looks like a good lunch, by the way.
Yeah, we'll see.
You're going to have to give up. Is that meat, though, in there?
This is chorizo.
Oh, okay. Right, yeah, it's chorizo. Salad. Yeah, that's meat. All right.
Yes.
So you're going to have to give that up now that you're in L.A. You know that.
I know.
Yes, so, fish tacos.
All right, well, thank you. Just say anything signing off type of.
Thanks.
Perfect. Thank you for that.
We all have led in our non-sober periods somewhat chaotic lives.
But then again, you're not to blame.
You're a very special person.
You're such a pain in the ass, John.
A victim of the insane.
You're right on schedule, sweetheart, and I'm glad you're here.
Hey, it's a fellow artist. Check this out. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I just want you to look at... They published my cartoon, you...
Kayla is a 13-year-old who must endure the tidal wave of contemporary suburban adolescence as she makes her way through the last week of middle school. In the end of a disastrous year of 8th grade, anybody who's been in 8th grade or has an 8th grader knows how difficult this period of time is in a young person's life and how unbelievably lonely it can be if you're not just one of the very popular kids. And I believe even for many of those popular kids, they're struggling. And I've got one myself. I've got an 8th grader, now he's a 9th grader, I guess. But I have a great deal of compassion heightened by sitting through this movie with tears in my eyes. By the way, as they were for Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, these two movies really rocked me. And I was lucky to see both of them at the BAM Cinema Fest this past June. Anyhow, Bo Burnham, very well-known comedian, is now directed this first feature. It's spectacular. We have Kayla, the actress who plays Kayla, played by Elsie Fisher. Again, we have Emily Robinson, who plays this character Olivia, a friend that she develops who's in the high school. Her class goes and they go check out the high school that they're zoned for, and they're each matched up with a high schooler. And she's lucky enough to have this wonderful girl, Olivia, played by Emily, who's going to be with us, joining us. And it's a great part of the film, that their friendship. And then lastly, we all know who Josh Hamilton is, the great great character. I guess you call him a character actor at this stage. But Josh Hamilton is a veteran in the independent film world at this point in time. He does a lot of television as well. But people will, let's see, I'm going to guess, may remember him coming on the scene in the mid-90s with Kicking and Screaming, that classic of Noah Baumbach films. He was in that movie. He's done so many. The House of Yes, Urbania. He was in Alexander the Last, a film that I like called 10 Stories Tall. He was in Margaret by Kenneth Lonergan. That was a great film. And he is a regular, though I want to mention, he's also a regular. He was a regular in American Horror Story, and Madam Secretary, and 13 Reasons Why. So he's done a lot of television. But go see Eighth Grade if you can, please. But first, here is the team behind Eighth Grade. And it opens in New York here Friday at the Alamo Drafthouse in downtown Brooklyn, at the AMC Lowe's Lincoln Square 13, and at the Angelica Film Center in the Village. Check your local listings or go to tickets.8thgrademovie or go to tickets.8thgrademovie and you can get find tickets in your neighborhood. Go see it, folks. And we're lucky enough to have the team. We have Bo, Elsie, Emily, and Josh here on FilmWax Radio.
Hey, guys. It's Kayla back with another video. So, the topic of today's video is being yourself. Being yourself can be hard, and it's like, aren't I always being myself? And yeah, for sure. But being yourself is like not changing yourself to impress someone else. A lot of people like call me quiet or shy or whatever, but I'm not quiet.
Most quiet, Kayla Day.
I don't talk a lot at school, but if people talk to me and stuff, they'd find out that I'm like really funny and cool and talkative.
By the way, I like your shirt a lot. It's like so cool.
What? Kayla, one more week of eighth grade, huh?
Huh?
I said one more week of eighth grade, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, huh?
Hello?
Hey, Josh, it's Chanel again. So we have you here with Elsie and Emily. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. Good.
Can you hear us well?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great. So we're going to grab Bo, and then we're going to get you guys underway.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, thanks.
Okay.
This is Adam, who I do this.
Hey, Adam.
I think we've met a couple of times, like, after screenings, but probably at, like, BAM or things like that. I think it...
Yeah, I thought your name sounded familiar. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Hey.
Of course it did, I mean. Oh, Bo's here.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Bo.
Okay, everybody pick up their mics.
Cute.
And I think the speaker sounds good. Hi, Bo, nice to meet you.
Hey, I'm nice to meet you.
Pleasure
nice to meet you, Adam.
Love the movie.
Thank you.
Yeah, let me just do something quick. And Josh, you'll be patient with us because you can't see what we're doing. And so just so you know, the name of the podcast is called FilmWax Radio. And we, you know, I did talk to people in the whole industry of the film, independent, mostly art house. Oh, and that's Noah, who's helping with they do.
Cool. Good to meet you, Noah.
He likes your comedy. So
for whatever reason, I'm so sorry.
Hold that a little higher.
We all make mistakes.
And just hold it a little higher.
Yes.
Oh, wait, yikes. Okay, so let me introduce everybody. Okay, so we have Emily Robinson, who plays Olivia, right, in the film. And we have also, of course, I just don't want to screw up, Elsie Fisher. I have to watch my language on top of it. This is so much to think about. Director Bo Burnham is here. Congratulations with
Thank you.
Film. Thank you.
And last but certainly not least, actor Josh Hamilton is here, who plays Mark, Kayla's dad, the eighth grader's dad. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Thanks, everybody. And I appreciate it all the more because you're obviously going to do a lot of press. It's probably all a blur already.
It's not a blur. Distinct lines being drawn.
Right.
Oh, very good. I'm glad. Let's get started talking about this special film. I want to say one thing first. I have an eighth grader. I actually have one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So when I went to see...
What is it? What type?
It has different I can't. There's so much I have to.
Psychic typing.
I'm just gonna. He's a boy, and he just turned 14, and he's right now actually he's in Paris with his mother and his sister. But anyway,
so he's going into freshman year.
He's going into high school.
Yeah, okay.
Into his yes, exactly. So this was really crazy, and I'm only thing I want to then I'll shut up is that is I went and I saw it and I was very emotional there, you know, because first of all, Josh, I mean, that you played me in that. I'm the creepy dad. That's me, like wanting just to stand and make sure he's okay all the time. And I one of the last things that happened right before, after I saw the movie at BAM, I went to a press screening there, and everybody's holding their mics at this speakerphone. And I went to a school function right at the end of the year, and it was in the gym, and it was like you know, or the auditorium, what have you. And, you know, my kid's supposed to present his science project to everybody. He's supposed to stop by. And one teacher brought over this young woman, young girl, who's in eighth grade. And she just could not want to be there. And she didn't want us to talk to him or make eye contact. And I'm just thinking, my son, to his benefit, to his credit, went with along with it. But I'm just thinking, this is a moment in eighth grade. This is exactly the kind of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
All to say that not only did I tell all the faculty they must see eighth grade, which I did, but that it is this is a documentary. You didn't make a narrative film.
Oh, good. We did pay the actors like it was a documentary. Right, Josh?
Yeah, yeah. We had a summer of those things that say, if you walk in this area, you agree to consent to be filmed.
Say again?
Yeah. He said we had signs that just said,
oh,
if you're filmed in the area. Basically, the actors just walked onto set.
Basically.
Yeah, Josh was in the area. And we threw on a collared shirt.
Like, you're in a movie now.
Well, it's
good timing, really.
Well, we're joking, obviously, but there is a slight documentary feel to the approach.
Mm.
But let's just talk about the script, which I know you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But how much input, let's say, did Elsie and Emily, for instance,
they
have?
They took the vowels.
Okay.
No, I was kidding. Yeah, no.
Just about.
Well, it really was like there was sort of a built-in negative space to the script that I knew mm-hmm. the kids were going to fill. You know what I mean? Like in terms of just going like I wasn't writing a novel. I knew I was making a movie, and that was the only way I could talk about this time was to just kind of give some of the authorship to the kids at a certain point. So once I wrote it, I kind of just went to Elsie and was like, does this sound right? And just defer to her.
Authenticity check, right?
Yeah, and the only unauthentic part was, like, originally all of her stuff was on Facebook, all of her DMs. So I told, after I read the full script, I'm like, nobody uses Facebook anymore.
And I put that line in the script.
And then
put
that line in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, she thought she was like, is this about my aunt?
That's right. Exactly. And one thing I was also going to remark on, you look now the same age, it's... How did you do that? I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Emily and Elsie.
I know, but she really did. She's like, she definitely looks older than she looked.
Yeah, I grew like 3 inches.
Are you saying she looked the same age in the movie?
Yeah, they clearly look very different ages in the movie, and I just saw it, so it's kind of of screwing with my mind a little bit.
Yeah, Elsie's grown up. Elsie's also grown like 2-3 inches since it. Because they were I was really seeing it last night because I had hung with you guys outside of it. Like last night I was like, oh wow, you used to be like a whole head taller than her. Now it's not the case. Yeah. When did you guys grow?
The same height.
When did you grow up so fast? Full height, Emily?
I honestly have no. I think probably around middle school. I am 5'5", so I'm your height now, Elsie.
Yeah.
Or you're my height now.
Yeah.
I didn't grow to.
Nah, I'll take it.
Okay, cool.
So actually, why don't you tell me since we're here, what do you want to do?
I was going to hold it up to him.
Oh, no. I think we'll disconnect him or something scary will happen. What your Kayla, who Elsie, you play, who is the primary character in this film, is 13 at the time. She's turning 14. It's the last days of middle school or junior high school, whatever they call it, wherever, whatever neighborhood you're in or town. And you, how old were you when you made acting the role out?
I was about 14, freshly 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about you, Emily? You're playing somebody who's in their second or third year of high school?
Or? Yeah, I was a senior, I think.
A senior?
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. And I had just finished high school. So,
okay. Yeah. So you were so now.
I'm now 19, so what I was yeah. 18, yeah.
And you're now.
I'm now 15.
15.
Yes.
Yeah.
But maybe Kayla is 14. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't know it's if it's even late. Stated. It's
it like as never a stated.
I know.
Just going by the. Like, yeah. What I got from these strategy folks.
Yeah, so, no, so yeah. But it's like she's playing herself, you know, her age. I mean, Kayla she's definitely playing her age.
I understand.
She graduated eighth grade, then she.
Yeah,
like I was 14 in eighth grade.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just it is even in my own memory. If I could barely think back that many years ago when I was in junior high, as we called it, it was the horrible period of time, mm-hmm. just horrible for me. But I had the benefit of not having. I think it was a benefit of not having social media. I mean, I think, and a smartphone. Josh, you didn't have that. What do you think? Do you think it was? Do you think we had an easier time back in the 70s and 80s?
I do have to think that. I mean, I know that's sort of I do think so. I think it's hard enough trying to figure out who you are and you know, at that age without having to sort of figure it out in public. So I can't help but think. I mean. The only other positive might be is that, you know, at that age, I remember feeling so depressed and thinking like no one else has ever been depressed like this.
Right.
And, you know, there are, you know, at least now with social media, you might actually realize that other people are feeling the same way. And so there's good things too. But I mean, I have to think it was better without it. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, Bo, there's in that New Yorker article I started reading. And then I drifted off.
I understand.
Sorry, think about myself again.
Similar experience, yeah.
And you know, but you did mention in that you asked out, I think you're one of your, maybe a girlfriend. I'm not going to say it's your first girlfriend. I don't know. But you were roughly that age.
Yeah.
Your last girlfriend. I have to watch myself. I'm with a comedian. I forgot.
Zing.
Zingo.
And the article is actually very lovely. Michael Shulman, the reporter, is a very lovely person. Yeah, a great writer. Yeah. I was very nervous about it, and it was. He's a good.
I'm editing the disclaimer out either way, so you can go
on about him
all you want.
yeah, right.
It's not ending up in the podcast. did you not ask out the girl? You on AOL chat?
Yeah, AIM. I asked her on AIM
chat or Messenger, mm-hmm.
and we separated on AIM as well.
You did?
Oh my! Yeah. Who ended it?
Full circle.
I probably did.
AIM?
I think I did. Yeah.
Oh my. God.
It's so funny to see even social media in its infancy was a way to like hide from each other. And
sure.
Yeah. I know. It was bad.
The only thing we had.
Cassie, I'm sorry. You're a great girl.
That stays in.
That gets louder.
I gave you a crappy mic, I think.
Sorry.
Or the cable. So just hold it on the handle. Just hold it on the handle. I'm sorry.
Yes.
For that.
That's me.
I rarely have so many people in one time. Usually, like a couple weeks ago, when I was talking to Paul Schrader.
Mm.
Just one-on-one. I'm sorry. That was just me showing off.
Of course.
But
Elsie is.
Say that again.
Very similar films.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, same vibe.
Well, Elsie has a big Paul Schrader poster above her bed in her bedroom, so it's very personal. He was very formative for Elsie.
In fairness, we talked about First Reformed.
We talked about First Reformed a lot.
Oh, right. Yeah. You have to see it because it's the same distribution company.
Yes. Please go see Moonlight and Woodshock.
Yes.
Look, I'm trying to. I'm very doing a very poor job of trying to express how moved I was by the film. That I really felt that you guys created something very special. And very honest and truthful. And I was trying to kind of figure out how you were able to pull that off so well, because it's complex. You have, I don't know how you got to that, such a honest core. Why did you decide, Bo, to go for that particular time in somebody's life? In this case, of course, Kayla, the actor.
I find...
What about that age?
I find regular life to be very moving. When I saw videos of these kids online talking about themselves, I found them very moving and funny and embarrassing, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes all at the same time. So, yeah, I don't know. There's, you know, we talk a lot about kids in high school, but eighth grade is just really intense and transitional and confusing. And it felt like how I felt at the time. It feels sort of like how the culture feels at the time. It feels like we might be going through a bit of an eighth grade moment where things are intense and we don't know what to make of them. We're trying to get through them and we're maybe a little emotional, and we've maybe like the lights sort of got flicked on for the first time, and we're like taking inventory of ourselves and trying to fix it. And it's really, really messy.
I guess your body is also changing. So
exploding.
Quick, exploding. And yes. That there's this, you know,
like the emphatic, yes. 4th of July.
Yeah.
Most of the, I can't remember what I was going to say. Most of the film is about these days, like I mentioned, towards the end of the school year. And Elsie is really having such a struggle finding her voice and confidence in herself. She's really struggling with that. And any reminder, I know the relationship between you and Josh's character, her dad, was just, and also between her and Olivia, the two were so incredibly familiar. You know, they were just very, very, very recognizable. You know, this was, felt like there was no cliche things going on here. You know?
Yeah, well, the hope is to not try to avoid cliche if it presented itself. You know, to just be honest. And yeah. Sometimes honest is original, and sometimes what's honest is cliche. I mean, at the end, it's
true.
You know, a father and daughter sitting by a fire saying they care about each other. I mean, you've seen that before. You know, the scene of her on her phone at the dinner might as well be a Cheerios commercial. It's, if you treat it honestly.
Yeah.
And the two of them, I don't know, that, like, especially with Emily's character, like, that was
set
something
that
was
set up their relationship a little bit more too.
So the relationship between Kayla and Olivia, who's Emily's character, Olivia's a senior at the high school that Kayla goes to shadow, and is her shadow and sort of guide through the day. And I was worried, like, on the page felt a little cliche. Just felt like the sort of the clouds open up and this sort of angel came down, and I was worried that it would be very simple, but it totally didn't feel that way. And no. Emily, like, imbues it with just a lot of humanity and
incredible
subtlety, and
yeah.
You kind of see you see a lot of weird physical and like verbal mirroring in the two of them, and you just really understand each other. And I don't know what happened. It kind of, it was just sort of there between the two of you right away,
yeah.
It felt like, right?
Yeah, and like I would come out of the scene like still very much in it. Oh, I would be like, I love this.
No, I mean, Elsie is so amazing, and I think, like, Elsie is Kayla, and me as Olivia, I think we had this, like, very similar, like,
yeah,
mirrored,
yeah.
I don't know, energy, which was very sweet, and I feel like what we've kind of talked about since, like, after filming, and kind of since I've seen it, and it's been out, or not out, but, you know, we've been doing all of this, is that, like, Olivia kind of was, you know, dealt with, like, a lot of things that Kayla deals with.
I think I may. She seems very confident now, but it's clear, as a high school student, mm-hmm. much more mature and confident. But it also, your performance, Emily, shows somebody who, yeah, I got the same feeling, like, but she's worked through a lot to get to this point. So much so that she's still enormously empathetic, mm-hmm. or is that the right word? Empathic type of person who, so when she meets Young or Elsie, she sees herself. I mean, that's what I took away.
But I can also picture like a 25-year-old woman grad student coming up to Olivia and Olivia immediately being the Kayla to that person. Like that's what's really, like I think she really, you know, it's a lot of the movie is about sort of the relative intensity of these times, and especially that age, what time feels like, which is like, you know, she's looking back at a time capsule she made for herself that's 2 years old, and it looks like it's from another life, and 4 years from now is forever from now. And so that's what we wanted to do. Rather than to have this movie feel like, oh, we're looking back at this time, it's more like we're looking at it's someone within this time looking out from within this time. So not to be nostalgic, but to be just present with her. And if the movie's actively nostalgic, it's actually her being nostalgic for the person she thought she was going to be.
And Josh, did you guys? You're such a at this point such a veteran actor. I mean, well, you do a lot of theater, and you've been in many films and television, and so. Not that you would need to rehearse, but the relationship comes off as just so real and raw. I just wondered if you guys had worked things together. Had you talked with Elsie? Did you rehearse? I mean, what?
Yeah, we did. I mean, and that's, I mean, the single most, you know, it's so rare in film that being the point of non-existent. I mean, almost, you almost never get that, especially in a small film. It's just not enough time. or money. And Bo was really important to Bo, and I'm so grateful because you know, we got to rehearse, but also just hang out. You know, he made sure that Elsie and I got to hang out. You know, when she was visiting the city with her family, and we all hung out. You know, went to the High Line and got to really spend time together, and also just go through the scenes. And you know, it was something that was the rehearsing the scenes, but also just spending time together. You know, once we were up day shooting, we'd go go kart riding, and you know.
Yeah.
Just hang out a lot, and it was invaluable. You know, because, you know, there's been times where you end up, you know, you go to the set of the first day, and you're like, oh, hi, you're my wife, you're my kids, great, nice to meet you, okay, you know, action. I can't say how much I appreciated that process.
I bet. Did you have a child, don't you?
I do, I have two kids. I have an 11-year-old boy and a 5-year-old girl.
Oh, wow, okay, so you have one that's kind of on the cusp of...
Yeah, I realize. I think I really want to see it, but I'm not very. I'm actually not sure he knows what a blowjob is yet, and I don't know whether to, you know, prepare him for that or just let him watch it.
Don't prepare him for that.
What goes into the preparation for that? No, that's a different podcast.
You should not be involved in that.
Yeah. You can sit this one out.
I mean, my son was over. I don't know if I should now introduce a personal anecdote right now, but my kid did see the. I made him watch the trailer. I came home and he was over, and I made him watch the trailer. And I said, "I really want you. You know, I'm looking forward to taking him to see Eighth Grade." There's nothing there that they that he hasn't already had to cope with on some level. I know. But I think this is going to be a comfort to kids to see this. I really think this is, I think it should be, I mean, I don't normally advocate so much, but I really believe this is could be used almost like as an educational, there should be an educational distribution for this film. Doesn't that make sense to?
Well, To Kill a Mockingbird. Sorry, what were we saying?
Even last night.
Josh, you play kind of an Atticus Finch type, only.
Yeah, exactly.
The one who lurks around malls watching their, you know, kids' friends.
Last night, like a family friend, her like son, who I've known since we were tiny, he came and it was interesting because I think, like many, like he's just graduated high school, but still like completely related with Kayla, and I think like talked very specifically about how like that representation of both middle school and also like how that applies to all, like can apply to all of grade school, was really just impactful. And seeing relationships like the one with Olivia and the one with the dad, like really gave him like. I don't know, like this sounds like I'm just like saying a person, but like it was very genuine because I've known this kid since forever, and it was like a way that we could actually have this conversation and kind of like broke through the barrier of like, and he was like, it's weird that, you know, I'm talking about this with you because like we've had kind of a, I don't know, a similar relationship to a...
Yeah.
It's like
the required stuff should be beyond just like Of Mice and Men. Like maybe have some stuff that they see that's actually related to their experience. It is rated R. So it will be rated R. The parents have to bring the kids. So, but their life is rated R. Trust me, this movie is
for
not.
Sure.
This movie is not teaching them anything.
Yeah, that's true. So it is a bit of a quandary. A bit of, you know, that it's really, I think, so would be so great for a lot of eighth graders and around that age to be able to see the film and see that how universal it is, to the degree where it's a part, you know, where a real filmmaker and cast and, you know, production made a film just about those feelings that you know, you're experiencing. Oh, wow. So I'm not alone, you know. And yet it's rated R, so that can't happen.
I didn't know it was rated R. I should be PG-13. What made it rated R?
Blowjob.
The banana stuff. We have multiple F words. We also, right. they saw the trailer and just said nudes. Just saying nudes made it R, which is incredible.
Yeah.
I know we have to wind up, but I think
you can blow up as many people as you want. Get a PG-13.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
One thing you can do, you know, is it make a. I mean, I'm not sure inventing this idea for you, but one thing you could do is have an edit for schools to see the film. Why can't you just have like some scenes edited out specifically for school screenings.
That can, you know, if that if those public schools cough up enough dough, I'll do anything.
Yeah, right. It's going to cost them. I don't know that I've done.
My dad took me to the PG version of Saturday Night Fever, which they released about a year later.
Oh, amazing!
My dad took me to see Chinatown, and then I think when Jack Nicholson gets his nose cut, he put his hands over my eyes or something. I think that was his idea of parenting.
You must.
But now, in retrospect, I'm grateful. At the time, maybe not so much. The name of the film is called Eighth Grade. It's directed by Bo Burnham. It's being distributed by A24, and it stars Elsie Fisher and Emily Robinson and Josh Hamilton, among others. And it's opening in New York and L.A. July 13th, Friday, July 13th. And I'm going to recommend everybody go see it, but also tell everybody so, because it's going to have a national distribution hopefully soon after that or the days and weeks after that.
Yes.
But it really makes a difference how it does in New York and L.A.
Yeah, totally.
Sneak your kids in. I'm just going to...
Yeah, please do. And, but have them buy a ticket. Thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.
It's delightful meeting everybody.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. I'm going to be looking to bring you back on for the longer conversation one of these days.
I'd love to. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, guys, thanks very much.
Okay, so growing up can be a little bit scary and weird.
We will begin to explore these changing bodies of yours. It's gonna be lit. Don't hold back,
I wanna break free. As always, make sure to share and subscribe to my channel, Gucci.
I think you're so cool. Maybe you just need to put yourself out there a little.
I'm gonna stop eating with you if you keep doing this.
You said I could say one thing.
I'm really, like, nervous all the time. I try really hard not to feel that way. But you just need to face your fears and let people know the real you.
Just grab my phone, how to charge it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I charge it too. But my phone,
Just because things are happening right now doesn't mean they're always gonna happen.
What was in there?
Just sort of my hopes and dreams.
Right.
I was a complete mess when I was your age.
Really?
Eighth grade is the worst.
You never know what's next. And that's what makes things exciting and scary and fun.
When did you get Snapchat? What grade?
Fifth grade.
Fifth grade? What? Yo, see?
So there you go, Gus Van Sant on Film Wax Radio, Bo Burnham, Josh Hamilton, all on Film Wax Radio. You already know we've got Ramin Barani coming up on episode 500, but what's coming up this next episode? We have the new documentary. It's currently out also. It opened Friday. I put up the segment up on our YouTube channel so people could get this in time, but it's called Milford Graves, Full Mantis. It's a documentary, a music documentary memoir of this great musician. And we have Milford himself, as well as the filmmaker, Jake McGansky. And then also on the next episode, we have Paul Rutan, who is the guy, he's the technician who has restored all of the Beatles movies. And he's just done this last one was Yellow Submarine, which is enjoying its 50th anniversary this year, and which will have a run next month at the Film Forum, but is currently playing theatrically in various parts of the country. So Google, where you can see a new copy. I looked at the trailer. It's fantastic. We'll play a bit of it right now, of the kind of the marketing piece around it. But please go try see this classic animated film, Yellow Submarine, beautifully restored in 4K. And then after that, Ed Lockman, the famous cinematographer who's worked with everybody. He's known everybody and all the great filmmakers and cinematographers. This guy has collaborated with all of them. So keep tuning in. Please subscribe if you're not a subscriber. And we will see you very soon. So please do take care of yourself and the ones you love. Until next time.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads.